calling us live this morning from South Africa, World Vision's Steve Quant. Steve Quant, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Bob, or good evening here in Zimbabwe. What's it called there? Uzimbabu.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, I think. I always say it different every day.
I just had lunch with you at the Five Point, and now you're in South Africa.
It's a weird world we live in, isn't it?
Yeah. How long did it take you to get there?
It was about a 24-hour trip, but they have a direct flight from Washington, D.C. to Johannesburg that was sweet, a lot better than a lot of the connections Eric and I have made over the years.
Now, my theory, Steve, I'm not sure what you're doing there, but I think you've got a few suitcases full of those New England Patriot World Champion shirts you're delivering to the
kids. Pass out some free clothing.
You know what? World Vision is the recipient of all those other T-shirts. In fact, Eric and I were in Ethiopia a couple of years ago, and we saw Seattle Mariner World Champion T-shirts.
No.
There. So, yeah, World Vision is very lucky.
You were right.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. They've
that?
Got the Green Bay Packer NFC Champ shirts. They've got the San Diego Charger NFC Champ shirts. It all goes to World Vision.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. We get all the wrong printed shirts because they print up, both sides. And it's an exclusive contract that all the sports leagues have with us. So we're blessed to have those.
Now,
so
do the...
For you, Joe. I'll see if I can find you some.
I would love blasphemy to have them here. Do the... some of the tourists who go on safari, is it confusing for the natives? Because they always got to go, what? They didn't win? And...
Well, you know, Eric can attest to this, too. Anything with American writing on it down here is very, very popular. And a lot of times they do knockoffs, and the printing is less than stellar a lot of the time. So you see some pretty funky Ralph Lauren and Ralph, just knockoffs that are pretty poorly done. It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah. It doesn't break a kid's heart if he's wearing a Patriot shirt and you go up to him and say, kid, let me tell you about a guy named Eli Manning. Let me tell you what he did.
They're not going
to
know.
Yeah, I'm not even sure they understand. It's just American writing, and to them, that's cool. And it's a new shirt.
All the bootlegs from concerts are confiscated. The people wearing Bob Sugar and the Silver Ballet Band. They're all over the continent. Big
Steve.
Time.
That's right.
Steve,
like the Impaler shirts down here.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You mentioned that that American writing looks cool to them. Is that in the same way that, Japanese symbols look cool to us? Like, women will have a Japanese symbol tattooed on their lower back? Is it that sort of coolness?
Yeah, I should look around for tramp stamps in America. It's exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing.
Okay, just curious.
It's as cool here.
Now, you and I talked, when we were talking about where we were going to go in Africa, it's really kind of, it feels a little weird to try and imagine, well, where should we go? Should we go to countries that sound like they have more problems, like Rwanda, because they've been publicized, Somalia? Mm-hmm. And you basically said you can go anywhere in Africa, and there is massive poverty anywhere.
You know, it's an interesting point, Bob. South Africa, I've never been here before. This is my first trip down here. And it's the most developed country in Africa by far. You know, Eric and I have traveled in Eastern Africa a lot. And this is a completely different animal. There's internet. There's more available cell phone coverage almost everywhere. Yet, in the midst of all this infrastructure that is missing in the most of the rest of Africa, there's extreme poverty here. And it looks exactly like the rest of Africa. So it's a real dichotomy.
There is. So, but they have... They have the richer getting richer and the poorer getting poorer, just on a much different scale than we do.
They do. They have a real class system here. And the people that are doing well are doing okay. They're not doing great here. And the people that are poor are just as poor as anywhere else in this continent.
And, Steve, that's what I was wondering. When you do get outside of the cities, do you see these shanty towns that do not even have corrugated tin roofs where they don't have running water and they don't have electricity?
Well, I think I dropped out.
No, you're
still there.
But did you see the...
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it is a real dichotomy. There are two sets of classes, but the poverty looks the same. And so we're down here trying
and you
to
guys,
see what we can do.
You guys, we just had Jewel in the studio. I don't know if you're familiar with Jewel, the country singer. But she is doing clean water and wells all over the world, too.
awesome. Water is the key to life, you know, because I think you and I talked about this last week at lunch, Bob.
Yeah.
If a kid has to spend his entire day going to get dirty water, I mean the entire day, making 2 10-mile walks, he can't go to school. Plus, he's poisoning himself and his family. So their health is bad. The mother probably can't work because she's sick. And a clean well, like Jewel's talking about, like World Vision does, brings economic stability to a community. It brings health to community.
Right.
And it brings education to the children.
You want to reach out. You want to do something for them, you know. And you'd like to, like, bring a PlayStation there. But then instead of the water, they'd be just sitting at the PlayStation all day. So that's no good. You got to get them into school.
Yeah. Well, it's school to learn how to play the PlayStation. Yeah.
Eventually, yeah. There will be a PlayStation, because that's when they'll have an economy.
There is a downside. Once you get them educated, they will turn down those Patriot Championship T-shirts. They'll know they're completely bogus.
That's probably true. We were in 2 schools today, and they sang for us and danced, and it was very, very interesting and then wonderful to see the kids.
Now, Africa is a place, too, where our dollar is still pretty strong, right? I mean, you can build a lot of well or a lot of school for what we would consider not a lot of money.
Absolutely. You know, World Vision, we talk about for a buck a day or about a dollar a day. And, you know, it's kind of hard to imagine that when you're in America. But here, you can see a dollar go, you know, $4, $5, $6 worth of American stuff. Yeah, it's amazing how the economy is so skewed down here and how far the dollars go. Yeah, it's amazing. You're right.
Steve, I had lunch with you at the 5 spot. I know you love a good American diner menu, as I do. What do you eat when you're out? I mean, are you like Eric? Will you try the unconventional foods?
I do like to try the unconventional stuff. Maybe not as wild as Eric, because he'll eat anything, living or dead. But, you know, the food here, there's a lot of chicken and a lot of beef here. This is a beef... Well, that's what they say.
Yeah.
I don't see a lot of dogs walking around, so I don't know. But, no, it's wonderful food. Very spicy. A lot of curry. It's sort of an Indian flavor down here. It's wonderful.
All right. Steve Quant in South Africa. Thank you for making the phone call. Really appreciate it. I got a better connection than I would have if you were at the West Seattle Bridge, so that was very nice.
We'll talk to you guys later. Have a great day.
Take care, Steve. KZOK and The Rock Wood-Fired Pizza, presenting the School of the Rock Battle of the Band. And we are down to it, folks. The 46 band instructors have picked, and the top 8 have been chosen. Congratulations to semifinalists Rogers, Shorecrest, Shorewood, South Whidbey, Meadowdale, Decatur, Issaquah, whom you're listening to in the background, and Kentridge. From the 8 semifinalists, winners will be chosen by our celebrity judges, Dr. Brad McDavid, director of the University of Washington Husky Marching Band, who may be recruiting from some of these schools, we'll see. Gerard Schwartz is the Seattle Symphony Music Director, but his wife and his close friends just call him Maestro. And Don Bennett is here, president, owner, chief kahuna at Don Bennett Drum Studios. The winners will be announced tomorrow, Friday, February 8th. During this segment of the show, we'll listen to a little bit of each of the 8 bands, and a la American Band Idol, we'll get some thoughts and some comments from the judges. Let's welcome our celebrity judges. First, Gerard Schwartz, welcome back to the show. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thanks for inviting me.
We really appreciate having you here. And Brad, you talked to me on the phone early on in this contest, didn't you? Let's swing the mic. Luciana's going to be you're going to be key grip. You're going to be boom gal. First off, thank you very much. As we were starting this contest, all of the advice you gave us was good, and none of the advice about internet voting came from you.
That's correct.
All right. All right. Let's get that mic in front of his face, if we can. She's trying to take some pictures. So welcome. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Bob.
You at University of Washington exist at the highest level of this kind of performance. A college band like the UW, the Husky Marching Band, they compete for big dough sometimes, don't they?
Actually, no, college bands don't compete, but what we compete for is just the listening audience. We've never been a band that performs for ourselves. We love playing the type of music that people are going to listen to and not run out and get a hot dog to. So we play the type of music that these bands have been playing that have been a part of your contest. And man, it's just really exciting to have you guys promote that type
of music. But you're at the top level. Do you recruit like the way they do for the football team, free cell phone and maybe a summer job that you don't have to actually go to or anything?
Hey, clean that up. That was cleaned
up. That was 10 years ago. But I mean, do you go out to schools and do you travel to islands of the Philippines and look for some guy that can play real well or?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always out and about looking for hot players, but we don't have scholarships. I can't walk out to the best trumpeter in the state and say, I want you to wear purple next year, but I can promise them the opportunity to perform in front of 70,000 people.
Time on the field,
absolutely.
Which is important to these guys.
Absolutely.
Okay. And some trips, right? I mean, you guys get to travel to some pretty great places.
Yeah, the last game of the season, our seniors took a little trip down to the Hawaiian Islands to play Hawaii, so that was a pretty nice perk.
That's very nice.
Maestro, do you have a problem with when they cut off beer sales in the fourth quarter of a Symphony for Performance? Does the crowd ever get any backlash to you guys?
Never.
Maybe that was a question. Okay,
Gerard Schwartz, we are talking about Benaroya Hall now.
We are.
Of course. They cut off beer sales?
Are very big in the lobby. Yeah.
Is there a family section so I don't have to listen to people swear?
Yeah, the third tier.
The third tier, okay.
I would like to ask you a serious question, though. You know, now you're the maestro of a major symphony orchestra. Did you, at one time, conduct a school band? How did you start?
I didn't conduct a school, but I played in them, and I played in a marching band. I grew up in a town called Weehawken, New Jersey, and I played in the Weehawken marching band for football, and we had the worst football team in the state.
So you had to be good.
But I also was in a pep band, so I was in a little Dixieland band, and we would play at pep rallies for basketball even. So yeah, I had a lot of fun in those days.
And you still have an ear for and a passion for the music that this contest consists of.
I sure do. Brad has given me the inspiration.
Did you have a great time at band camp? Did you want to talk about that?
It was called Interlochen. It was a music camp, but everybody in my family called it band camp, even though all we do is play in orchestras. But
right. Gerard Schwartz, maestro with the Seattle Symphony. Gerard, everybody just looks at what you do. It looks wonderfully glorious and fun, and it kind of looks easy in a sense because, we all can play air wand.
There you go. It is. It is.
But seriously, no, I mean, it must be a lot harder than it looks. Give me some sense, like some sort of, drive-by understanding of how intricate some of those motions you're making are.
On the one hand, it is very simple because we don't make any sound, so we don't miss notes, we don't crack notes, we don't make bad entrances, we don't play the wrong notes, we just wave our arms. So in a simple way, of course, it's easy. The hard part of it is that every little nuance you do affects a fine orchestra and how they play. They watch you meticulously and carefully. You have to prepare and study every nuance of every part. If you're conducting a Beethoven symphony, you have to hopefully know all of Beethoven's music, piano sonatas, symphonies, opera. It's a tremendous amount of knowledge that you bring to everything. And from the beginning, you have to set how fast it goes, what the character of the music's going to be. It is very complicated. On the other hand, of course, if you conduct in a shower, it would work. You could get in front of our orchestra and you could wave your arms.
You could probably do it. Well, it's interesting because and this may be really cheeky of me to compare my job to what you do, but here I work with very talented performers, and I kind of conduct.
Absolutely.
And I wonder if you have the same problem I have, is that every one of them thinks my job is easy and anybody
solo,
can do
solo,
it.
Solo, solo, solo! Absolutely.
All
of the guys in the orchestra always think that they could... No, I shouldn't say that. Many of them think they could do it better than I could.
Right.
Thanks for not looking at me directly.
Do you have a food taster, too? Someone to test your food to make sure? All right, let's introduce again an old friend of the show, Don Bennett from Don Bennett Drum Studio, another sponsor of this contest. And let's also mention, although they're not here, that's what kind of people they are, the Rockwood Fired Pizza, great community leaders. And, they thought, let's do something for bands. And that's how this competition came about. It was not like, a typical promotion kind of a deal where we sit there and think of a way to do, they said, we've got money, we want to give it to high school bands. We think that, first off, for their customers, a lot of them are kids and families, And after games and such, they all want to go out for pizza. And so here's this really smart business who said, we'll do something nice in the community and hopefully build some goodwill. And it turned into this monster deal. And then Don jumped on and said, well, let me help too, because also you give lessons, you sell drums, you help bands in all sorts of ways. Don Bennett has been involved with our show and has brought some of the greatest drummers of all time who've ever played into our studio. Just rattle off a list of some of the famous names.
Kenny Aronoff, Bernard Purdy, Steve Smith, Cindy Blackman, who else? Marky Ramone.
Is Ringo considered one of the big drummers or not?
Yes, yes.
He would. He would be a great drummer. Yeah.
Don got us John Bonham, Keith Moon, Ringo Starr.
Yeah, those were fun.
We shouldn't have partied so hard with those guys.
Now, does Ringo visit? I know drummers come in all the time to your place from all over the world. Has he been in there?
He can never come to the shop, so we always go to where he is.
Oh, so you have, and you've met pretty much every great drummer who's ever lived.
You know, I amaze myself sometimes. I go, I can't believe I just spent the afternoon with Charlie Watts.
Right.
That's pretty cool. I can't believe I just had lunch with Ringo.
Is there some trait that all drummers have in common other than, you know, potentially drinking themselves to death? You know, they tend to do everything with great speed and great intensity. But is there some other trait they have in common? They all lift weights, right? Don't they?
No, I think we tend to be skinny little guys in general. You know, I think if there was one broad trait that I see drummers have, is they're enjoyable people who like to have a good time. That might be where
some of the partying comes in. Sure, sure.
But, you know, if there's going to be a guy...
They're fun. They're the rhythm. They're the pulse of what's going on.
That is the fun guy in the band, that's the cut-up in the band, it's going to tend to be the drummer. And I'll bet you guys might be able to concur with me on that.
And the symphony orchestra, it's the same.
Even in band.
They are absolutely a wonderful, wonderful group of all the sections. They tend to be the most together, the most... community-minded players and ones having the most fun and enjoyment.
All right. Well, we want to thank you all for coming, and it's nice to get to know you each a little bit. Without any further ado, let's not waste any more time, because we've got to listen to 8 clips, a good section of each clip from all of our semifinal bands. First up, we had already heard Issaquah, but we'll give them another shot. First up, let's start with semifinalist Rogers High School. And I want you all to listen, take a few notes, and make a couple of quick comments. Rogers High School took the classic rock part of this contest very seriously, threw in a guitar, and really seemed to jam very well. Quick comments, Gerard. Go ahead.
I thought they sounded fantastic. I mean, if you had told me that this is a high school group, I would have been shocked. I mean, it's great playing.
Awesome. Brad.
Well, they're known as one of the top concert programs in the state, and man, they didn't disappoint. I would have liked to have heard more of the band, though. I heard a raging rock guitarist, and whoever played that is outstanding. I would have cared to hear a little bit more band in the background.
And Drom Bennett.
You know,
I'm going to call you Drom Bennett.
That works. You know, I kind of agree. I love that song, and they've got a great rocking rhythm section. Those guys are doing great. But when you've got this whole band, I'd like to hear some more of those horns in there.
Okay. That's just one of our 8 semifinalists. Next up, let's listen to Shorecrest, School of the Rock Battle of the Bands contest. And there go the bagpipes. It's Shorecrest High School. Go the other way this time, Don Bennett. And by the way, we can't. Only one of you gets to be Simon. So Don Bennett, you're first. Go ahead.
Hey, that was also really cool. Yeah, I like the way. Now there was more band in there. Not quite as tight as the first one. Wow, I wish there was a bagpipe player in my high school band. That's new for me. But yeah, that's cool. I like the way they've incorporated the whole band in there.
You're big on Shorecrest. And Brad?
Yeah, I love the arrangement. I love the fact, I mean, Rod Stewart would be proud, I'm sure. We got the bagpipes in there, and I like the fact that the group has a really good feel for the style of the piece.
Finally, Gerard.
Well, to me, of course, it's incredible imagination. To think of this arrangement in that way is extraordinary. I'm knocked out with it.
Gerard from the Seattle Symphony, knocked out by Shorecrest. Next up, Shorewood. How far is Shorewood from Shorecrest?
Other side of I-5, not too far away.
All right, these are sort of in the same neighborhood.
A bit ballpark, Shoreline School District.
School of the Rock finalists, Shorewood. With Brad McDavid, the guy you see in front of the UW Husky band. Brad, what do you think?
Obviously, I listen to a lot. It was Edgar Winter, isn't it?
Frank. That's Edgar
yes,
Winter.
It is.
Frank.
Yeah,
that's...
man, the sax has had the style down. Really impressive, yeah.
That's a tough piece to chew, isn't
it, really
Don?
Is.
I think it's a great choice of a song. It really lends itself very well to this. Yeah, that was really cool.
Well, the thing to me...
Nice arrangement.
It's a great arrangement. And to see hear the woodwinds playing like that, so far we haven't heard much of that. So you hear a real depth to the orchestration or the band version of this. It's fantastic.
I'm partial to it.
Woodwind means
player.
It's got
You're
air.
Partial to the woodwinds? Yeah.
for the drummer. That means air is used.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
No problem.
And
help.
The ladies like the woodwinds too, right?
I played flute for many, many years. I never went to band camp.
All right. Sounds like good news for sure.
And don't start the drummer jokes.
Next up. In the School of the Rock, Battle of the Bands from the Rock, Wood-Fired Pizza. And again, $10,000 at stake for prize number one. You guys got to pick. I'd like to do this the same way we did the voting. You guys each pick your top three then separately. Then we meet and you guys can do your discussions. Next up, South Whidbey High School. That's a very classic rock, very dark classic rock song. Not a, it's a male choice. Casey's shaking her head. The Cashmere is one of
I like it. There's just a part there that kind of that kind of sounded off, but maybe that's
one of our favorite songs. Spike and the Impalers do play it. Let's start with Gerard. Gerard.
Well, this is in a way harder than the others because it's a little slower piece, and to keep the ensemble, to keep it tight and together at this slow pace is very difficult. I thought they did it wonderfully. I think you're right a little bit. It's not quite as blended, and the intonation wasn't quite as good as the others, but terrific playing.
And Brad.
Yeah, the kids on the island obviously really know how to rock. I think I've really enjoyed the rhythm section of that, but I thought it was a good balance between the winds and the rhythm section, although I concur, I think the intonation wasn't quite as locked in.
And Don Bennett, drum studio.
You know, that whoever that drummer is was really good. He was really
Yeah,
was there a drummer in that?
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're down to the final four of the eight semifinalists, and they're not in any particular order, folks. The final four of the eight semifinalists will be listened to, so stand by. We'll be right back. The conductor of the Seattle Symphony for 23 seasons, Gerard Schwartz, is here with us. Brad McDavid, the director of athletic bands at the University of Washington. And, of course, is it like 250 people in your marching band? That's amazing. And Don Bennett from Don Bennett Drum Studio. Listening to these guys talk during the break, I thought I'd pass on one thing. They're all impressed that these kinds of sounds are coming from a high school band. Gerard, you said it strongest, I think, that this is they're playing, the ones that are in our finals are playing above high school level, wouldn't you say?
It's fantastic to hear, and to hear also some smaller communities. You know, South Woodby, who would have thought that they would have a band of this? In a small community, not a large school. It's absolutely fantastic.
It's great stuff. Yeah. All right, and now we have four more to go before you guys go into the back room and pick the winner, which will be announced tomorrow morning on the show at 7:15 in the morning. Is that correct?
Well, we could actually do it later than that if you like.
Well, I was thinking that maybe people would be on their buses on the way to school. Is it up to us?
Yeah, it's up to us.
Okay, we haven't got some official rule that some lawyer...
Well, I think the rules say 8 a.m., but we can change the rules. That's in the rules, too.
Oh, I love that.
Let's not start too much rule changing.
I love changing the rules. We have absolute power.
Well, we could announce it at 7:15, at 8, and at 9:45. I mean, I think you...
All right, we'll announce it tomorrow during the show. We'll start at 7:15, yes.
By the way, the folks from The Rock will be here at 8:30 tomorrow. I could have them come in sooner if you like.
No, if it's already written at 8, it's going to be 8.
How about fourth place early, and then we'll announce third place second place 1 minute after that?
After what we went through with the online voting...
How about we just let people vote instead? What would that be? How would that be?
That'd be great. Okay, we have the final four bands to listen to. All of our judges have been taking notes, and each judge will pick their top three, and then they will confer and see where they are and award the $10,000 prize for first place, the $5,000 prize for second. Third place is $2,000 worth of Ludwig drums from Don Bennett Drum Studio, and the fourth is a $500. And it could be a $500 cash, I understand, or a gift certificate if you want to go have a pizza party at the Rockwood Fired Pizza. And again, if you get a chance in the next couple days to stop in to one of the Rockwood Fire Pizza locations, say thanks to them for being great business leaders in the community. The Rockwood Fire Pizza. Make sure you speak to the manager and tell him that you really appreciate what they've done. All right. Next up, Decatur High School. Or 624, the Chicago tune. Don Bennett nodding his head, giving it the the drummer's timing beat of approval. You liked the percussion there.
The whole band. That was great.
Okay.
Actually, that was a song we played in high school a long, long time ago. But yeah, it's great.
And Brad from UW.
Yeah, they get an A for tune selection. I love the Chicago chart. I think it fits a pep band really well. And whoever did the arrangement, it was nicely done.
On Decatur, Gerard.
Well, it's nice to hear extraordinary arrangements. You think about how much work these band directors have put into this to make the arrangements effective for their ensembles. And this, whoever did this arrangement did a beautiful job.
All right. Good news for Decatur. It's going to be hard to come up with, first off, a number one.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tough choice because each one of you has got to pick a number one, then a number two, three, and then four. Out of the eight, you have plenty of great stuff to choose from here. All right, next up, Issaquah, whom we heard a little bit of before, but let's refresh everybody's memory. All right, there's Kung Fu Fighting, which we started the break with last time. Thoughts, Gerard?
Well, I think it's great. It's hard to start this, and the imagination that they used, and their sense of togetherness as a group was wonderful. And also, I love the variety of sounds from the band. It wasn't just trumpets, trombones, and drums, but a lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah, and it's the only entry, as far as I know, from the disco era. So, hey, you got to take
that. That's right. Spike gave him a knock on the disco thing. We'll see how that plays out in the final voting. Don Bennett, go.
Yeah, that was cool. That was probably the most clever arrangement yet. That was a nice arrangement.
All right.
They made the most with the least. It's like making the Venus de Milo from cow dung. I mean, that's beauty from garbage.
Okay.
True.
Not Spike's favorite song. Next up
I love their spirit. That was phenomenal.
Next up is this the final? We have Decatur, Issaquah. Who else is left, Eric?
We have Meadowdale, and we also have Kentridge.
Let's do Meadowdale first. Ladies and gentlemen, Meadowdale High School.
We have a little dead air at the beginning here.
That's a big, full band, and that's very tight, isn't it?
It's very tight.
Yeah, as I was looking over all the entrants there today, I thought, man, somebody's got to do something by the Doobie. So I was so glad to hear that, and great to hear it from a drummer's perspective. They use everybody in the drum line and not just somebody sitting back there on a drum set. So that was great.
Brad, you and I would have spent some time together back in the old days with headphones on, listening to the Doobies and Chicago.
Absolutely.
Yes, we're from the same era. Okay.
I think the whole band had mono when they played that, too. Am I mistaken on that?
Gerard. What?
Courage.
Actually, the cut was
Courage.
In mono.
It was.
Which, by the way, a tribute to how good it sounded, because it wasn't recorded with the same stereo mic as the others. Gerard, go ahead.
It's also recorded a lot of echo. So, but what's interesting is it has a lot of depth to the sound, a lot of variety in the ensemble. So it actually sounds like a big organ.
Keep in mind, by the way, the eight bands, these semifinals, will be re-recorded in a beautiful concert hall, not Benaroya, although we did actually make an inquiry. The Edmonds Performing Arts Center, have you been up there? That's
top-notch
facility.
Wonderful spot, yeah.
All right, Don Bennett, your last word on Meadowdale.
The one we just heard.
Yes.
Yeah, great. Again, pretty traditional arrangement. Good choice of song, very tight, very dynamic, very nice.
Finally, Kentridge High School.
Hey.
are so tight. Actually, I'd like to get Luciana. Just point the camera. You're doing a little video. Point it at Gerard and have him conduct these guys. We'll put it on the web. All right, that's it. You got 5 seconds out of him before he said, all right, enough.
That's enough.
This could get out.
They don't need me.
This could be my YouTube disaster. Okay, boy, that's my favorite, by the way, and I know it's not the hardest rock song.
Are you voting? Wait a second.
Hell no,
I don't
he's
have
not voting.
Is he allowed to do that?
No, sir, he's not.
I have no influence, but I just love that song.
And the judges.
And I thought the arrangement was great, but you guys go ahead.
Yeah, that was good. Another tight arrangement. Boy, this is going to be very difficult. There's not a lot that's going to separate the greatest one of these from the least great. Boy, see how I...
Least
I
love great. That. No, it's least great. You are the kindest guy I've ever met.
It's the it's the football analogy.
Honey, that was least great.
On any given Sunday, any one of these bands could be the winner.
Yes.
That's very good stuff. All right, and Gerard, you would agree.
Yeah, I think it was fantastic. Also, it's a little more color in this. It wasn't all loud. It had a little more dynamics. Again, wonderful, wonderful playing.
Yeah, and speaking of color, it's really entertaining because we didn't get a chance to hear the whole thing, but they go from what I would term soft rock to the Stones, so it's an arrangement that has great appeal.
All right. Brad McDavid, University of Washington, Gerard Schwartz, Seattle Symphony, Don Bennett Drum Studio, thank you all for being our expert panel of judges. Believe me, we wanted not to be responsible at all for how this comes out. And you know what? I must say, because we chose the band directors to judge... It's clear that the solid players got through on this. And by the way, the ones that came in ninth on any given Sunday, on any given day, would deserve to be in the top eight, too. We have probably 10 or 15 more that could have been in the finals here. So it means we'll have fun with this contest for years to come. You guys ready to go and start the judging process?
We're ready.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much. A while ago, we spoke on the phone with the lovely and talented singer Jewel. That was last year. We're delighted that she took us up on our invitation to hop across the hall from our country station. And here she is in town. She's not only live in the studio, but she's brought her guitar along as well for a taste of the new Jewel CD. To date, by the way, this beautiful young lady has already sold nearly 30 million CDs worldwide. And when her new CD, Perfectly Clear, comes out, we'll tack on another 5 mil. What do you think? 5 mil?
We hope.
Yeah. Jewel, by the way, my brother will kill me because I didn't mention ahead of time that you'd be here because I didn't know.
Aw, that's sweet.
He's like a huge, not scary fan, but but a borderline. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good, thank you.
You're touring the whole country now in support of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you love to play.
I do like to play. It's a fun job. I never thought my life would work out this good where I get paid to play and write songs.
Now that you're this good, though, do you still practice?
I'm always writing songs and goofing around, and that's sort of practice, I guess.
What sort of inspiration hits? When how does song inspiration hit you? Does it just float out of nowhere and you don't know, or do you look at something and say, I think I'll write a song about that?
I actually started writing songs because I was 16. I was going to school at a fine arts school in Michigan, and I wanted to hitchhike through Mexico for spring break, like all parents hope their children do one day.
Oh, of course they do, yes.
Well, I hope for my little girl.
Because it's so safe down there, and there are so many nice guys to show you around.
Yes, good people. But I got on the train in Detroit, and I had enough money to get to Chicago, and I thought, gosh, I grew up singing my whole life. My dad was a musician. I grew up bar singing and doing songs and that. But I couldn't read music. We were just talking about this. I couldn't read music, so I couldn't learn other people's songs. And I thought, gosh, I'll just make stuff up, and it'll be easier than having to learn somebody else's stuff.
You're kidding.
So I just went on a street
corner.
So
you thought you were taking a shortcut to the hard process of learning cover songs by simply writing what came into your head. I'll be lazy and just write what comes into my... That's funny.
I would just make stuff up about people as they walked by. You know, I'd look in office buildings and write about that and, you know, see people walk by and write about that and... I did make it to San Diego. I hitchhiked all through Mexico.
I gotta know this, though, before you go away from that. Were you good from the get-go? I mean, let's be honest. Were you like the one from Friends that wrote the song about the smelly cat when you first got started?
I don't know. My very first song that I wrote on that trip was Who'll Save Your Soul.
Oh,
so.
Wow.
Damn,
that's
what?
Your first song.
There's your answer.
Holy cow. Who are your big influences, Jewel?
All kinds. Merle Haggard is one of my big heroes because he wrote... I like people that write their own songs and their own hits. It's a hard thing to do, and Merle Haggard wrote, I think, 51 of his 54 number one hits, which is... You know, he deserves a cape. pretty much.
And in country music, frequently there are, I mean, we can say, I don't know why anybody has anything against them, because even Elvis was a guy who didn't write his own hits. But there's a sort of a look at people who don't write their hits as more or less manufactured stars, because
country actually has been really moved away from singer-songwriters in the last, I don't know, 10 or 15 years, I'd say. But it's really starting to come back now. You're really seeing like Taylor Swift's and a lot of kids that are really writing great music, and it's starting to really come back, because I do think that's the proudest tradition in country music.
How old are you, Jewel?
I'm 33.
You're 33 years old, so you're a little bit...
Don't ask me what I weigh. This is getting a little personal.
No, I wasn't going to go there.
You ask me every day.
I don't have to.
They should keep all women on...
You're actually sitting on a scale, and you don't know it. So
they should keep all women on ice for a lot of their life. You grew up in Alaska, right? Maybe that's why you look so good at 33.
Well, thank you, charmer over there, you.
But I already used the ugliest word in the planet. I used the C word on Jewel. I used the word cover.
Cover.
I know. I kind of had to chastise him.
You are a little older than some of the gals now, like Brittany, who are having all the problems, and some of the younger ones coming up. You're very, very well grounded. You're probably not into preaching or even giving advice, but if I could coax a little out of you, how do you stay so together and be in show business? Because it's tough.
You know, I grew up in Alaska on a ranch, and I think that really was grounding. I grew up with a lot of chores, no electricity. We had a coal stove for heat, so I wasn't raised like in pop culture. I also didn't do this to become famous. I did it because I love music, and I think you do this job for two reasons. One's because you love music and you try every day to serve music, and the other's because you want to be famous and you just use music to get famous. So I think this happened to me when I was young too. It's hard growing up. I mean, my first record came out when I was 18. You know, a lot of stuff I wrote when I was 16. So you know, handling this career definitely takes a lot, but that's why I never lived in Hollywood. You know, I've just lived in Texas on a ranch, and I try and stay out of it and really focus on writing.
Now that you've been writing for several years, has your process evolved, and do you have like a creative spot or a particular place you'll go? I was seeing a thing about Katie Lang, and she's got a chair that she likes, and she'll go sit in that chair.
Really?
And she's methodical in the way she does things.
Joe has one part of his couch that's a foot lower than the other half of the couch.
Yeah, I do. Or does it just kind of, you know, you're in the shopping market and something will hit you, or do you have a process that you go through to write a song?
You know, it's changed over the years. I was really lucky. You know, my first record didn't actually do that good for about a year. Couldn't get arrested on the radio. Didn't sell any copies.
What record label were you on?
I was on Atlantic.
You were on Atlantic from the start.
Mm-hmm. But I didn't really fit in anywhere. My music, grunge was huge, and my music wasn't grunge, and, you know, nobody knew what to do with me. And I was about to start making a second record when Bob Dylan took me on the road. And when I went out with Dylan, they were like, he won't watch your show. He doesn't meet the opening
Clarify,
act.
You didn't go out with Dylan.
I went out on the road.
On the road with Dylan. Okay, just checking.
Yes. And
I don't know if he was like Woody Allen. She looks good. She looks very good.
I like you, no kidding.
But anyway, he did end up watching my show, and his tour manager was like, you're not going to believe this, but Dylan is requesting your presence in his dressing room. And I was like, I mean, you can't not meet Bob Dylan. I mean, I went downstairs, and he was great, you know, and he really mentored me for the whole tour. Just every night he'd sit with me and talk with me about lyrics, talk with me about my own lyrics.
What sorts of things does Bob Dylan say to a young songwriter about lyrics and putting a song together?
At first he was just like, what are you reading, you know? I was like, I'm reading Proust right now. He's like, oh, yeah, I learned French once to read that. I'm like, oh, I hate him.
Crack that off. Yeah,
thanks for that.
So this already answers one question that I had. Lyrics are, in some music, lyrics are not that important. Mm-hmm. In your music, lyrics are everything. And you are telling a story, you are relating something. And you actually have to be well-read or researched or have enough experience input in your head to come out with something, right?
I just loved reading. I loved, you know, novelists, and I, you know, when I started writing songs, it was just sort of an extension of that. And I've been writing poetry my whole life, and it was kind of just a natural thing to write. And my life, you know, was just kind of a hard, random, strange life. I was homeless for a while, and I just had a lot. You know, I saw a lot of the world. And
so you don't watch like a lot of Wife Swap and Dancing with the Stars to get all juiced up to write a good song or anything.
I haven't lately, no.
But you wouldn't mind those things either.
I was also really lucky. After that, Neil Young took me on the road, and I was touring solo acoustic with Crazy Horse, which is, you know, one of the best rock bands in the world. And I was playing solo acoustic. I wasn't very popular. My record was now kind of just starting to take off, and I was playing Madison Square Garden with them, you know, sold out. I'm solo acoustic in front of a pretty much male rock crowd, and I'm singing, like, really sensitive, like, songs. And I must have looked really green because I walked by Neil's dressing room, and he's like, what's the matter? And I'm like, you look nervous. I'm like, I am nervous. He's like, why are you nervous? I'm like, it's Madison Square Garden, and you're Neil Young and Crazy Horse. I'm going to be slaughtered out there. And he comes up to me, and he puts his finger in my face. He goes, this is just another hash house on the road to success. You show them no respect. I thought it was cool. But it really was because of them that I had the courage to kind of keep going, stick to my own music, not change what I was doing, and kind of stick it out. And then my record ended up doing real well.
Eric.
Jewel, you are definitely hanging around with the best singer-songwriters that we've ever seen, Neil Young and Bob Dylan. You could call them activist philosophers, if you will. And I'm wondering, now that you are famous, what sorts of causes and philosophies are you trying to put out in the world now? What do people...
Or are you? Do you believe that that's... Because that's a big part of those guys. They had a lot of things they wanted to convince people of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not into, like, convincing people of anything. I try never to be didactic or preachy, you know, my music. I try never to tell people what to think. I really believe in raising questions and letting people come to their own conclusions. But there are, you know... When I was homeless, I had bad kidneys, and I had to drink a gallon of clean water a day, and it was too expensive. I couldn't afford it, and I thought, gosh, we're in America, and if I can't afford bottled water, I wonder what it's like in other places. And if I ever got in a position to help, I said I would. And in 97, just a few years later, I got to start, my brother and I started an organization called Project Clean Water. And we basically, 50 cents of all my ticket sales goes to Project Clean Water, and my brother goes around the world, and we put in wells in different villages all around the world. We've done about 35 wells in 15 different countries.
Wow. Okay, that's big. So you make the statement. Fantastic.
Yeah.
We work with World Vision on similar projects.
Great.
Very good stuff.
Good.
All right, Jewel, we'll leave you enough time to sing. And this is your the single off of your
sure.
new album.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Let's do this, though. Let's move her microphone a little, Luciana. It's got sort of like the way it is when you sing out of it, Spike. It's tilted a little sideways.
A lot sideways now.
And, of course, we're not really equipped for this. We just sort of threw it together. It should be... Is that how it is when you...
Yeah.
Okay, go for it. Ladies and gentlemen, live in our studio, gracious enough to stop by.
All right.
Here's Jewel.
I wrote this because I was driving down the road with my boyfriend, and I heard a comedian on air say that men only have two basic emotions. They're either hungry or, you know, frisky. So it sort of got me off on a tangent. This is called Stronger Woman. I guess you could say I'm one of those girls. So he's been with one of those guys. You know the type. Like right now he sleeps while I write. But it's better than crying. I'm worn out from trying. I'm loving a man who always makes it clear I'm not welcome here. Just if he's hungry or frisky or needs something clean, you know what I mean. But not tonight. Cause the morning lights, I'm gonna love myself more than anyone else. Believe in me, even if someone can't see a stronger woman in me. I'm gonna be my own best friend, stick with me till the end, won't lose myself. There's a stronger woman, a stronger woman in me. The light bulbs buzz and I get up, head to my door, wish there was more I could say. Another fairy tale fades to gray. I've lived on hope like a child, walking that mile, faking that smile. All the while wishing my heart had wings. Well, from now on I'm gonna be the kind of woman I'd want my daughter to be. Oh, I'm gonna love myself more than anyone else. Believe in me, even if someone can't see a stronger woman. Lose myself again. Never know, 'cause there's a stronger woman. A stronger woman. This is me packing up my bags. This is me headed for the door. This is me, the best you ever had. I'm gonna love
someone can't see a stronger woman in me. Gonna be my own best friend, stick with me till the end, won't lose myself again. Never know, cause there's a stronger woman, a stronger woman, there's a stronger woman.
And you didn't think 17,000 fat, balding bikers would just eat you up? I love you.
That's it.
Beautiful.
You know what I wanted to say? I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I'm really hungry after that song. I'm very hungry. I don't know why I'm so hungry. Okay. Stronger Woman is available right now on iTunes. Jewel, thank you for stopping in.
Thanks for having me.
This is interesting. When you, as Joe put it, when you're offered a lot of money, if you'll just get sober, does it help? Amy Winehouse, who's currently in rehab, has been offered a huge gig, a coup. The producers of the James Bond movies are stepping up and offering Amy Winehouse the chance to sing the next James Bond song for the next James Bond movie. It's a big honor, by the way, which lots of stars, including, remember, Paul McCartney, Live and Let Die, have rode that vehicle to superstardom, to iconic stardom. According to the British tabloids, Amy... Yeah,
that Paul McCartney was nothing before that.
He was nothing before that. James Bond. Well, Paul McCartney is a solo artist. I would have to say that Live and Not Die may be his... one of his iconic best solo artist songs.
Yeah, one of that's yeah. That sounded...
It definitely made... It put wings on the map, that's for sure.
According to British tabloids... An offer is on the table for Amy Winehouse to write and perform the theme song for the next James Bond movie, but only if she tests sober when they have to make the choice in April. So we've given you to April to be completely squeaky clean. The next Bond flick will be called Quantum of Solace. I don't know what that means.
It means they ran out of ways to say die. Didn't die used to be in every theme, every name?
Yeah.
Quantum of Solace means the next level of trying to soothe oneself or find some sort of peace of mind.
A so-called source says it'll have a dark and moody feel, so Amy is our first choice. She would be absolutely perfect.
Well, she would be perfect not sober. I mean, all that music she wrote and created, I hate to say it, was a result of, you know, she was...
Hammered.
Not doing so well. If she comes out and she's happy and well-adjusted, can she still be moody and dark? I hope she can.
I think she'll be moodier and darker. She'll be at her moody, darkest best.
I hope she can.
That's a question, by the way, that comes up in sobriety circles all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, a lot of people, artists particularly, are prone to obsessive-compulsive behavior, and they think... that that's part of their inspiration, and that if they mellow out, they'll lose all their skill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when your music is based on that, I mean, like Kurt Cobain, I hate to say, of Nirvana, his music was dark, introspective, a lot about his pain and angst, and we saw how that played out.
Well, let me tell you something, Joe. And by the way, this may, your mileage may vary, but... Your pain and angst is being covered up by whatever you're taking. Trust me, you get sober, you got more pain and angst on your table than you ever knew you had.
It's a plethora.
You can't cover it up anymore.
Right.
Yeah. It's my opinion, of course, and it's just a glass half empty, half full thing, that getting a clean will create explosive artistry in someone. Look at Steven Tyler, for example, Aerosmith, famously got sober.
He is probably the standard for getting
clean. Put out the two biggest selling albums of his life. Look at people like Robin Williams, who were clearly headed for death. People like, trying to think of people I don't know personally. And I know a few personally. So, you know, I think Amy Winehouse would have. And by the way, I think Kurt Cobain, had he, you know, he had all kinds of problems. He had depression. He probably depression and drug mix.
But do you think his music was drug driven?
I mean, I think Kurt Cobain had drug problems, but I don't know if his music was drug-driven.
No, I think he was a brilliant artist.
Whereas Amy Winehouse, I kind of back Joe on this one. I mean, the girl's got that, you know, I hate to say it, that heroin-y kind of, you know, opium den kind of sound to her.
And
if
again,
she cleans up, man,
I'll go with Layne Staley, a guy who didn't make it, that, you know,
Layne's
imagine the albums he'd be making.
Yeah, but when I think Layne's music, I think more that was kind of drug-driven creativity.
But imagine with the shackles removed. Again, I'm really you're not going to get me away from glass half full on this. I've got a lot invested.
I'm not saying she should stay that way, but what I'm saying is, like, okay, Britney Spears, let's give her an example. She's nuts. She's nuts. Well, and it doesn't help her music or hurt it, because her music has nothing to do with that. I don't even think she writes her own music.
Right.
Let's ask the audience. Do drugs help creativity for anybody?
You know, I think you got to say, yeah. There's a time of music where drugs were the fuel. I mean, look at the Beatles. The Beatles were doing I Want to Hold Your Hand, and, you know, they start getting stoned with some Baja Michi Robert. That guy died yesterday, by the way. That Meher Babarishi, whatever his name was.
The Maharishi Yogi.
By the way, I'm not saying drugs don't influence art. There is no way I am saying that.
Okay.
What I am saying is, in your journey as a human being, if you become addicted to drugs, is there a chance that getting clean would be bad for your career?
Well,
when they're there's a syringe half empty, syringe half full. Yeah, you're right.
I know.
When they're saying they like the dark and moody, I'm just wondering if she's going to come out, you know,
when
writing.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mama. Yeah, well, no, Amy, I'm sorry, it's not a Bond kind of song. So
yeah,
we're going to move on here.
She might be Don't Worry, Be Happy. I mean, she may be so happy that she isn't depressed, which would be great.
You don't want Amy Winehouse happy.
No, I'll.
You want her doped up for your amusement, just like you want your wife barefoot and pregnant at home making the dinner while you decide who the next president is.
I will gladly let somebody live, you know, to a ripe old age and not ever make music again. I think that'd be a fine decision.
Sure.
I mean,
who sucked after they got sober? Josh, hello. You're there, Josh. Go ahead.
Yes, I am. I went to a Trent Reznor concert before he got sober, and his music was awesome. And after he got sober, I went to his recent concert here in Seattle, and he just sucked.
Amadeus.
That's your Nine Inch Nails guy, by the way, Trent Reznor. Yeah, Amadeus. Well, he never did get sober, did he?
Did he get sober, Eric?
He died.
They didn't have a little promises for
for the powdered wig set? Yeah.
No, he never got sober.
Okay, thank you. Joe in Woodinville, hello.
Hello.
You're on.
I'd like to say Motley Crue, Shot at the Devil, their album, they dedicated it right there in writing to Jack Daniels, cocaine, all the drugs they happened to be doing at the time. One of the best rock albums ever. So I think a lot of music is drug-driven.
All right, but that's not the question. And by the way, I will guarantee you that lots of great art has been done under the influence of all sorts of things.
Mr. Hendricks, meet Miss Joplin.
Good all right, but once someone reaches a point where it's a danger to their health,
right,
will it hurt or help their career to get better?
Eric Clapton's a great example of sober and still beyond
monstrously huge.
Yeah.
Doug in Linwood. Hello, Doug.
A lot of our inventors from years and years ago that we learned about in school, all your Graham Bells and, of course, Da Vinci's and everybody else, they were all high on opium and everything else and thought of all kinds of stuff to invent.
You think that the telephone came out of a...
Telephone, electricity, all those inventors that wrote things down on paper and everything else were proven drug addicts back in the day, in the whenever it was, 1700s, 1800s.
I never heard that Alexander Graham Bell had a problem.
I didn't hear that either. Eric, search Alexander Graham Bell druggie.
I'll check.
There's got to be a website out there.
They put the Graham and Graham Bell, huh?
Hey, Google it, Google it, Google it, Google it. There's got to be a website out there.
Colleen in Tacoma. Hello, Colleen. Yes, Colleen.
Mine definitely makes a difference in the music you produce. Even Mary J. Blige, when she was depressed and doing drugs, her music was better then than it is now.
All right, so there seems to be a widespread held belief.
Yeah, well, you know, creativity, it opens doors, is what the justification is.
I can give you three examples from literature.
I agree.
I don't endorse this, but William Burroughs, Hunter S. Thompson, and Charles Bukowski, all three famous indulgers who might not have created anything if they hadn't.
Dude, Lewis
indulged.
Carroll, Edgar Allan Poe. I mean, these guys.
What did Edgar, what was Edgar on?
Oh, opium, big time.
Oh, really?
And liquor, cognac.
What is opium, by the way? I've never.
Opiums are, is an opiate. It's a it's a narcotic.
Okay. And it comes from poppies?
Yes.
And that's what caused...
the fuel of the Taliban.
Well, it's that's what caused Dorothy to fall asleep
poppies,
on the way
yeah,
to the castle.
Yeah, the white powder.
Patrick?
Yeah. Go ahead.
You're on... go ahead.
Oh,
hi,
yeah.
Patrick. I'm happy to be on your show.
And Steve Tyler, Booyah. The guys from Aerosmith, they've been clean for 10, 15, 20 years, you know, and they're doing really well.
And I mentioned them, and I mentioned a good handful of others, and I think the stars we mentioned that are clean and doing better were bigger stars than the people mentioned. I mean, Trent Reznor.
Yeah.
Well, so
I think it's great. I mean, the Aerosmith is clean, and I'm so happy Elton John cleaned up because I've seen some great Elton John shows. But the shows he plays and the songs he plays, I hate to say it, the biggest ones he made and the biggest ones Aerosmith made were pre-clean. Now, I'm glad they cleaned up to survive to play those shows for us and play those great songs, but when they were writing them...
So you take Dude Looks Like a Lady and you throw that away for a Sweet Emotion? You better music came out of the stoned Aerosmith?
Much better. Yeah.
Well, Aerosmith's a hard one to compare because they were two different times and they were at the top of their craft both times.
That's true.
When classic rock was being made, greatest rock music of all time, that was just a part of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Aerosmith, Joe would prefer the older songs because, you know, he's old. But a lot of people would prefer the younger songs.
Yeah, oh yeah.
They ended up with two generations of music and more hair extensions than, you know.
And they're still going strong.
The Miss USA pageant.
The Miss Teen USA geography contest. Okay, Alan and Spanaway, your turn. Go ahead, Alan.
Hey, morning, guys. Hey, John Daly, great golfer. He played a lot better for the first 18 holes when he hit the 19th hole. You know what I'm saying? When he drank, he was a hell of a lot better golfer than he was when he stopped.
Now, he stopped older and less healthy, right?
Yeah.
He stopped because he lost his physical attributes. No one could say how well he would have played had he never drank. And had he been in peak physical condition and age for all of his career?
Yeah, yeah. He was in a lot better shape when he was carrying those 12-packs, though, in the bag, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
His hand was steadier on the putt, that's for sure.
Thank you, Alan. Yeah, that's Alan. Here's Nate. Nate, you're on.
Yeah, Stevie Ray Vaughan. He was cleaning up before he suddenly passed away. And his music was getting better.
He was on a huge rising star at that point.
Yeah.
Stevie Ray Vaughan, yes. One of the greatest guitarists of that ilk.
Oh, he's awesome. He had 3 or 4 months of sobriety.
I didn't know he was getting sober before that fateful helicopter ride.
Yeah.
Here is Eric and Yelm. I think Eric may have a personal story.
Hey, Bob, Spike, Joe, how y'all doing this morning?
Fat and happy.
Right on. Yeah, I was just commenting, man. I'm no musician. I play a little guitar here and there, but I go home from work, light up a nice bowl and my pipe, and I hit Guitar Hero, and I can make it all the way through Expert.
Yeah, I was wondering when we get into that. Yeah, a little bake is good for the video gaming.
And here's something interesting, Eric. Unless you do that, you're not inspired, are you?
No, because if I'm not stoned out of my mind, I can't make it through Expert. I just crank the music, get involved, pretend I'm up on stage, and man, I'm the man to beat.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I just think you just kind of zone in with the music and...
But can't you achieve that? I mean, Eric will tell you that Eastern practitioners of all sorts of meditation can get you to that state without endangering your lungs and without breaking the law. I mean, what's funny is
it's just one letter away, meditation and medication.
Yeah, you're
just
doing
one letter.
You're doing something that, which, by the way, I'm not objecting to it. I'm not. pretty harmless.
I'd rather have you locked in your house.
As long as you don't drive while you're doing it.
Oh, yeah.
But would it mean more or less to you if you could achieve that state of mind on your own?
Well,
imagine you could do that on your own without any aids, without any help.
You know, I'd love to be able to do it on my own, but you just, you know, you get into that relaxed mode and you're able to focus in on things a little bit better. I personally.
Have you ever tried to meditate?
Yeah, I have like a touch of ADD, so.
Doesn't work. Yeah, that's the way it is with me too.
Oh, hey,
thank you very much, Eric. And Renee in Seattle. Renee, hello.
Hello, how's it going?
Okay.
I have a pretty famous example of drug-induced poetry, I guess. Samuel Taylor Coleridge wrote a poem called Xanadu, and he was pretty famous for taking tincture of laudanum, which is an opium derivative. And he got interrupted about, I don't know, four stanzas into the poem, and went and answered the door, and when he came back, he couldn't remember anything else he was going to write, so the poem today, for as famous as it is only still half written.
Huh.
Did he end, like, mid-sentence? What's the end of the story?
You never know.
Pizza's here.
Pizza's here. Renee, thank you. And the last word from John in Seattle. John, hello.
Hello.
Hi, John.
Yeah. Being a local croner from Seattle, you get stoned to come up with these killer inventions, then you do nothing about it. Then you go through a bout of sobriety, and you pick up a patent book, and then you start smoking again, and that's about as far as it goes. So I think it's got a lot to do with the creativity. If you could monitor it, you probably get a lot more production. But
you could put a governor on it.
Stay stoned.
I've always wondered about this. Do things that seem like good ideas when you're stoned still seem like good inventions when you're sober? The fur-covered light bulb, for example.
There's definitely some serious pipe dreams that come out of there, but there is a few good ones here and there.
I think some are. I think we've established some people are very creative in that state. But then again, everybody's mileage varies. For instance, me, right now, an antihistamine disrupts my ability to accomplish anything.
Wow, you turned into quite a wuss.
I have.